This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, Saturdays are meant for fun. And now that we can't have fun, we can just imagine it.
Or you just go online and watch somebody else's fun. That's always like what we like to do.
Well, yes. You know, we can watch more movies. We can watch more action things.
Oh, yeah. And
I'll tell you one of the things I notice a lot on TV is all these people are moving to lakes.
Really?
They all want to move to a lake and let their children grow up on the lake. I've never seen so many lakes in all my life.
Wow.
They're all showing all these lakes. You've got to move to the lake. The children need the experience. They need the small town experience.
Really? I didn't even know that was a thing.
It is. It's a big thing. And then the others are all moving to the Caribbean. And they're buying islands out there. You know, in the Bahamas, there's 700 islands.
Really?
Well, a lot of those little small islands are for sale.
Really?
And people are buying those islands. They're building them resorts on those islands.
Huh.
Yeah. Some of them are shallow up to the islands, and some of them is real deep water up to them. But I've been seeing a lot of that.
Wow.
You know that I do see a lot of television now.
You do. You see an awful lot of TV.
Oh, my gosh. I never thought I would.
I didn't know there was 700 islands.
There's 700 islands in the Bahamas, and people have been buying these islands. They're like, you know, small islands, large islands. They've got all this white sand and beautiful ocean coming up to them. And, of course, they're heavily treed, and some of them have homes on them, really expensive ones, and then some of them have nothing on them. You have to start from scratch.
Really?
Yes. And so, I mean, I've been seeing all these people, oh, we've just got to move. You know, we're tired of Minneapolis. We're tired of the cold country. We're tired of all these places we live. We're going to move to these islands and live there. And I've often wondered, how long will that last?
That's true. Of course, when you're coming from Minneapolis, I would imagine it's probably a lot nicer, less snow.
Yes, it's going to be much nicer. And one couple that I saw, they owned a heating and air business in the Midwest. And they said, we can do our business 6 months out of the year, and then we'll come down here and stay 6 months.
Oh, wow. They must do good business.
Yeah, I thought, man, they must be doing a heck of a business. If you can do it 6 months and then just leave in the wintertime and come down here.
Wow. And then go back and pick up where you left off. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. I haven't figured it out. And a lot of people had small children, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old.
Really?
And I thought, you know, how's that going to work?
Huh.
But they all figured it was for the best. Their families are going to love it. The little children are going to love being in the water all the time.
Yeah. I didn't
know. They all seem to be water people.
So they're coming from someplace where there is no water. They're going to the water and becoming all of a sudden water people.
That's right. And they said they've spent their summers down there, and most of them, at the lakes especially, they've been to these places for years, and now they've finally taken the plunge, and they're going to spend the money and have a house there.
So are they moving permanently, or is this like a vacation?
Yes, all of these were permanent. None of these people were just going on vacation.
Really?
And the most expensive deal I saw, these people bought this home, almost $2 million.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. I mean, big house. I thought, man, if you change your mind, you got all your money stuck right here, you know?
Really?
But most of the houses were about $350,000 to $400,000 that they were spending to move to the islands. And they were just all, every kind of island in the world. They were just going right out there in the ocean, and you've got to have a boat to get you there from the mainland on every one of them.
Oh wow! So you can't even drive.
Yeah, no, you can't drive down any roads. It's all ocean, folks.
Well, that would be some extreme isolation and quarantine right there.
I think it would be, too.
It's very expensive quarantine, but still, you'd be by yourself.
That's right. You won't have to worry about the neighbors. You know, the neighbors aren't going to bother you because there is none.
Yeah. The only neighbors you have are fish out your front door.
That's right. And you will be eating a lot of fish.
Yeah.
And anything you want will have to be flown in and boated over.
Wow. That could get a little pricey after a while.
I think it would. But these people seem to just think it was the greatest thing on earth.
Huh. Well, it sounds kind of fun. I've never thought about it, but wow.
It'd be fun for a while anyway, but don't you think after a while, if you there was only 5 miles you could go, I mean, on this little island, I mean, around the island, in 4 or 5 years, wouldn't you be just about half crazy?
Just about, yeah. You'd have to walk around the island like 3 or 4 times every day just for your morning exercise, and then once you see it, you have no other route to take. It's like that's all there is.
That's right. Or you get in your boat every day and go to the mainland. And you have to go to the mainland for supplies.
Yeah.
You can't walk to the grocery store.
Yeah. If you want a hamburger, you got to, you know, go all the way across the water.
Yeah. Go to a taco stand and get some fish tacos.
Oh, now that sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you wear shorts every day. You know, there's no reason to have anything else.
Yeah. No shoes, I'm sure.
No, you don't need shoes.
Yeah, be in the sand all day.
That's right. You're in the sand and lots of sunscreen, and you just play on the beach all day.
Until hurricane season comes, and then who knows what happens.
We don't know if it wipes you out or not. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, see, we got to do a little follow-up on that just to see what happens after the first year.
Yeah, how many are still there on the island after hurricane? How many are out in the ocean?
Yeah.
Floating by as they float by.
Leave it to us to poke holes in an otherwise brilliant plan.
That's right. I mean, you know.
Wow.
Only us would think of that.
Yeah,
oh,
we would. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
So I saw something, and I only saw the headline the other day about, I think it was, it was some state, I want to say it was the GDP or something had fallen like to historic lows. I'm sorry, I should have done a little research before I brought that up. But the point is that some things are, I guess, can we say a downward trending? As far as economic outlooks. And so people are looking for other ways to make money. People are saying, man, you know, we're in a bad situation for a lot of different reasons. What can we do? So from your perspective, how are things looking? How is the outlook? What do you think is going to happen? What are you hearing on the streets? What's the situation of things?
Well, you know that we have a million something claims for unemployment right now.
Wow.
Over a million claims for unemployment.
I hadn't seen
A lot of people have went back to work. Over 5 million, I believe, have went back to work. But we're still, a lot of people, like restaurants especially, they're saying, call in, place an order, have them deliver your food, help the restaurants out. And that's one thing we can do is, you know, call in and a couple of times a week, you know, have the restaurants send out food. There's a lot of other businesses we can't help, but, you know, we're supposed to stay home, stay out of this, wear your mask. We're doing all that. And I don't know, like you say, it is downward projection right now because so many businesses can't get full service. People cannot take advantage. In fact, myself, I order everything. I ordered a lot of stuff from Target, and, you know, they have this little outside deal. And if you put your truck up, the people just come out and put it in the back of your car and you leave.
So you didn't have to see anybody.
You don't have to see anybody. You don't have to go in a store.
Yeah.
You don't have to be exposed to anything. So this makes their sales really down because people are not going in the store. They're just doing like I'm doing. They call the order in and pick it up at the door.
You know, you're right. You bring up a great point. A lot of people that go into a store will oftentimes go for what they need. But then, you know, they walk down the aisle and they see something else and that triggers something. And they're, I need this or I forgot that. Or just a random, hey, that's a neat thing. Let me get that even though I don't need it. Never thought of it before. I assume that that a lot of retail locations count on impulsive buys as people are walking through the store. And those have got to be all gone now.
Those are all gone. People don't need it anymore. They just order online what they need, and it keeps you from spending as much. That's what it does, because you're intent on just what you need. You order it, and you get off the computer, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. And I know that myself, you know, if you're going down the aisles, you're going to look at everything there.
Yeah.
And you're going to say, well, yeah, I probably need that. Sure, I need that. But when you do it online, it's purposeful. You just order what you need. You don't order any extras. And so you're saving money, but it's not helping the stores.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think everybody's like that. I mean, a lot of things that we thought we could not do without, we can do without, and we are, you know. And Neiman Marcus, you know, you have to have an appointment to even go in the store. So why would anybody even go?
Exactly. Yeah, it's not like
you have to have an appointment, it takes all the fun out of it. Don't even bother. I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because you can go online at Neiman's, if you're going to Neiman's, and buy it online. Belk's one of my favorite stores. They'll deliver. They deliver everything. They ship everything. And they have a good return policy. So why would you go to a store?
Yeah, yeah, and with companies operating only at a certain percentage of what they were before, they don't need as many employees. And a lot of people at the beginning of all this were saying, well, you know, there's an opportunity for a lot of new ways to do business, a lot of new aspects of companies and businesses that could pop up as people adjust. But I don't see a lot of that happening. I see a lot of cutbacks and cut downs, but not a whole lot of, you know, new extensions to a lot of businesses. I don't know what you're seeing on your end.
Well, now there's only one company that I know of has expanded and expanded. And that's HEB. Now, HEB has their own meat processing plants. They grow a lot of their own food, a lot of vegetables, this sort of thing. And I was just reading this about HEB. Since the hurricanes years ago on Corpus and everything, they have a hotline, so they call it. And they have these guys that prepare all year long for emergencies. They have an emergency preparedness deal in their company.
Really?
And they have three guys that run it. So if there's an emergency anywhere, they can get food there quickly. They can do all kinds of things to help people. And when this came up, they were ready for this in February. They were already concerned. They were already ready, and they put their plans in place. Now, what they did, they bought extra trucks. Said, we need more trucks on the road to deliver food quicker. We don't have enough trucks. They bought extra warehouse to warehouse more food where they could get it out to their stores quickly. I mean, they are proactive. I never heard of a company that has their own emergency preparedness. They're a lot better than the government.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
I didn't even realize that division even existed, and for it to be so scalable on such a fast turnaround.
Oh, my gosh. It is a fast turnaround. Emergency preparedness, they work all year long in case there's an emergency anywhere in the state of Texas. And when this one happened and they saw that they were getting short of supplies, they said, we need more trucks. They ran out and bought more trucks. They said, we need more warehouse space. We've got to get the vegetables. We've got to get the food here where we can get it out. And like they said, to start with, they were already ready to distance people. They started it before anybody else. At first, they weren't going to have masks. And then they saw that the mask was saving lives. So they put that in place. You will wear a mask here. Then the employees were mad. They said, we're risking our lives, and we're not getting paid much. They said, okay, $2 an hour more right now.
Wow.
So Yeah, they're fast at what they do. When they see that they're wrong, they immediately go and say, okay, we'll fix that right quick.
Wow.
And they did. And as I said, they've got this three-people group. That's all they work on is emergency preparedness, making sure they can get food out in different emergencies. I didn't even know, didn't realize they owned all their own meat processing plants.
I didn't know that either. I mean, I know they...
But they do.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, they process their own meat. They grow all their own vegetables, and that's why they can respond in emergency. Like other people, you know, were short of all this. They said they were only a little bit short one time, mm-hmm. and they figured out what the problem was and corrected that immediately.
Yeah, they adjusted quickly. I think all the vegetables and things like that are all, you know, by local farmers and local, you know, some of the products that they have are made by local people. So I would imagine probably it's a very different setup from, you know, somebody like a big box store that has, you know, just suppliers from all over the place. So I guess when you have people in your own region, you can kind of control product supply and things like that a little bit better than just having some random supplier from who knows where.
Oh, yeah, and they have big farmers that farm thousands of acres and have contracts with them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've got that handled. And I was shocked that they just bought more warehouse space. They said, we don't have enough for this pandemic because it's so large. So they bought more warehouse space where they could keep up with the demand for food. And I didn't even know it, but I think it was one of the Spurs. He was from one of the foreign Caribbean islands, and they had a storm and wrecked the whole island. And they went to HEB and said, we really need help. Well, they flew all this food and water to that island.
Wow, that's amazing.
They were on it immediately.
How cool.
Yeah, so if anybody has an emergency, they can call on them, and they will get there quick.
You know, it's amazing that when Mr. Butts set this all up, that it was a totally, it wasn't just a store like everybody else, to seek out local farmers, local suppliers, and things like that. I don't know that at the beginning they probably didn't sit around and say, you know, hey, we may have a pandemic at some point, but to be able to set up a structure like that is so flexible. And so scalable on so many different levels is really, it's got to be some kind of an inspiration, I would think, to other retail outlets that, maybe this might be the way to go. I don't know. I don't know if they even care.
Yeah, if everybody was as smart as they were, they would have the same system in every state for if there's an emergency, they can keep all the supplies coming because, as you know, Kroger, all these others were caught. And the supplies were very low there for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, there was so many things you couldn't buy.
Yeah, I remember the meat shortage.
And there's still a lot of things you can't buy, like Lysol and things like that, and bleach.
Yeah.
That's the two things I see a shortage of all the time.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing to me that one company, you know, would be this dadgum smart.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are plenty that aren't, and so, you know, people are looking for other alternatives. You know, like you said, you know, unemployment is at very high rates, and so a lot of people are they're either in situations now, or they may be staring down the situation. They may be saying, "Hey, look, you know, looking a month or two or three down the road, we could be in a situation." And so, I think a lot of people are a little bit more frugal now, you know, because of maybe.
I think they're a lot more frugal than they were. Yes.
Yeah, and so they can't afford to take risks like they, you know, okay, yeah, I can afford to lose $100,000 here, maybe $200,000 there in the market, or $60,000 or whatever it is. And so, you know, people are in this place now where it's like, well, Faye, we shouldn't be spending money that we don't have. We have to save as much as we can. We have to protect our core financial assets, and then not do anything different. So. When it comes to making money, you say the exact opposite is true, not for Wall Street, but with life settlements.
That's exactly right. And the people that invest in life settlements, they do it over and over again. And once we get the pattern down, we figure out how to do it, you know, and we keep doing it over and over the same way. And, you know, the people haven't changed. They're still getting cancer. They're still passing away. We're still buying their policies. We buy policies every day. We try to stay with that stage four. There's a few cancers that are stage three. They don't even go to stage four. And we try to buy as short as possible. You know, my idea is the 24 to 30 month. I think those are the best policies. A lot of people like the 12 month or 18 month. But for me, the 24 to 30 is the right kind. I like them. If it's up to me and I'm investing in them, that's what I do. When people have cancer, there's two things on their mind. How can I save my life? And that's what they're trying to do. And how can I get the best care and try to survive? So it's very expensive. It's about $100,000 a month. So then they come to us and say, I have a life insurance policy I need to sell.
And then,
so we bid on that policy. If we get it, then we call, we send out emails to our clients and say, would you like to get in this policy? We think it's a good one. We'd like to have you in it for $50,000 or $80,000, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So we do that time and time again. That's the way it works. We have to bid on the policies. You know, we always tell people, 21st Services or AVS or Fasano, these are independent companies. They bring us the life expectancy. We don't have anything to do with those reports. We accept them from these companies. They pay for them. We don't pay for the life expectancy. They bring it to us with the client information to see if we're interested in buying it. And that's really the way it works. If we buy the policy, we put our people in it. They all have accounts at Nevada Trust. If they don't, we open one and set them up there. And then the bank takes it from there. The bank is our trustee. The bank makes sure the premiums are paid. All those premiums are escrowed in advance. And when the people pass away, again, the bank gets a certified death certificate, and they send it to the carrier, and the carrier pays them. And then they put the checks in everybody's account. And that's just that simple.
It is really straightforward. I mean, people think oftentimes, well, this is really, really complicated. But once you buy the policy and the original policyholder gets their lump sum, they're really out of the picture. So, that you know, that there's no back and forth and everything. You actually own, well, you and the investors, I would assume, own the policy. And so at that point, you're just waiting for it to mature and then pay out. And that's all there is to it.
That's all it is to it. We're waiting for that maturity when it happens. As I said, we get the death certificate. It has to be certified. And it goes to the carrier, and they pay the claim. And, you know, these are all A or A-plus companies. We don't buy B paper. We don't buy C paper. It has to be a company that's A or AA rated. And then there's some that we can't do business with, because several years ago, they started raising the premiums. And it went out to all the commissioners in the different states, and they're now suing those companies, telling them you can't do all this.
Really?
And it was about seven or eight companies that started raising the premiums. And so we have to stay away from those companies also. If they can raise the premium right in the middle, we want to stay away from them.
Yeah, that indicates dishonest business and gouging, and then we get into a whole other territory, which is just
terrible. That's exactly right. We don't want to do business with them. So, you know, we try to stay with the same insurance companies. We know them. We know they pay well. We know we don't have any problems with them. We had an unusual thing. I guess in all these years, we haven't had anybody that we know of that was cremated. And we had a claim turned in. And the guy was cremated. And for some reason, the funeral home blacked out his Social Security number. Well, when the carrier got it, they said, wait a minute, we're not going to accept this like this. So we had to go back to the funeral home and said, what were you thinking? They said, well, it was a cremation. We said, we don't care if it's a cremation or what it is. You can't black anything out. So they had to resend it to the insurance company with the Social Security where they could read it.
I've never heard of.
They wanted to be sure it was a, yeah.
Who sends redacted death certificates?
I don't know, but this funeral home did it. And it delayed the claim, I can tell you, because they said, no, we can't have that. We want to be sure it's our guy. They said, well, it was a cremation. They said, we don't care if it's a cremation. You know, we want to be able to read that Social Security and make sure it's him.
Wow, that's weird.
And so, yeah, that's the first cremation I know of. Because most of them are not. Because also, when we find out someone has passed away, we get the obituary. And we read the obituary. And so, you know, we always know, usually we have a picture of them at that point, and we read, you know, all about them, where they lived and what they did with their life. And so that's always interesting to me to see what kind of person it was.
Interesting. So, I know that, we know a lot about, you know, the type of cancer that that the policy holder has and, you know, their, you know, the treatments that they've been on and things like that. But I didn't realize that you actually got the obit and could, you know, see what they were like.
Yeah, we can do that. And we do that a lot of times. And especially if we have four or five, you know, at a time, I'll just say, well, send me over their obituaries. I'd like to read them. And I'll read about what kind of a family man they were, what they did for a living, how many children and grandchildren they had, and what they did for a living. So we do that lots of times. We read about them. Wow. Because when we go into this, we don't know. You know, we just know this is the person, this is their age, and this is the cancer, and this is where the treatment is being performed. We know where all they've had cancer treatment, if they're on radiation, if they were on chemo, if they were doing immunology therapy, I mean, we know all that. We just don't know anything about their life.
Wow. Neat.
So
that's a
we find that out.
Whole different aspect of it. I didn't know it was there. You know, you do kind of, you bring up the things as far as, you know, on the front end of the investment, because you get the obit afterwards. But on the front end, when people come in and they say, okay, Faye, I got your email about so-and-so policy, what kind of information do they get? Because I know that when a policy becomes available, you send them an email, and say, okay, we've got this policy. Do you want in or out? What does that email look like? Is there a report attached? Is there details?
Okay, the report is like two pages usually, sometimes three. And it'll go down and it'll say, this person is like 65 years of age. This is when the treatment started. The treatment started in 2017. And it tells each thing. When they noticed it, when it was discovered, if it was in the lungs, if it was in the liver, if it's in the ribs, if it's brain tumor, it tells you all about that. And it describes it very carefully. It tells what kind of treatment. It tells about the blood test. It tells everything that they had done. Now, sometimes if they don't give it all to us, we're going to ask for another report. And I will say, you know, this one wasn't extensive enough. We didn't get everything we need. But this will tell you how many times they've had chemo. It'll tell you what cancer drugs are on, which is real important. If they're not on any cancer drugs at all, I'd say they're not sick. But usually they're on several cancer drugs. It'll tell what chemo they're on. It'll tell how many times they've been in the hospital. It'll tell you if it's affecting other parts of their body. And it'll tell you what else they may have. It. They may say, well, they're a diabetic. They may say they're obese. You know, it tells all about their body. And the other thing, a lot of people, I've seen a doctor on television in the last week, and he said that virus deal feeds off of fat. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard.
It was on television this week, and this guy was with John Hopkins. And he said that this virus feeds off the fat deals in our body. So anybody that's obese, it's going to go right in and start eating on that right away. So those cells are what it feeds off of. So, and just like with cancer, if they're obese, they're going to go a lot quicker. So we're looking for, if they're obese, we're looking at what else they've done. If it says they're out playing golf, you can forget it. We're not buying that policy.
Yeah, that's not very
good. Because they're not sick. And, you know, several years ago, we found a guy and his doctor, that's what they were doing, out playing golf.
Really?
And so we knew that the guy wasn't that sick.
You know,
but if it tells all this other, we're going to get to the bottom of everything that's wrong with him.
When you look at these policies, I think you kind of bring up a good point here, because we say that, you know, you only bid on stage four cancer, not 3, 2, 1, because of the faster turnarounds with stage four. We know that the historical data is there, and those types of cases do mature a lot quicker, but it doesn't just automatically mean that you're bidding on any stage four cancer. You are looking at these things. So has there ever been a stage four policy that's come over that you've rejected, or do they all?
Yeah, we reject them all the time. I rejected one this week. It was $3 million.
Wow.
And when I read it, Fasano, which is the best, said on the back page, we did not get all the oncology reports from that hospital.
Mm.
Well, if you didn't get all of them, you know, I'm not going to go the distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't think he's sick enough. I've read and reread this thing, and I don't believe the guy's that sick.
And these are actual stage four. It's just.
Oh, yeah. This is stage. Lots of times we turn down stage fours.
Wow.
Yeah, I turned down two this week.
What is it doing, you know, mentioning the virus, what is this doing? Are policies maturing faster because people can't get in to get treatments because the virus is taking over hospitals?
We thought they would be, but it's not being reported if they are. You know, we had that 9 million mature the first quarter, and we've just dripping in since, and we haven't had a lot of them. What we're finding is it's taking longer for us to get our contracts back. The people are scared. They don't want to leave the house to go sign the contracts.
Oh.
And this is the first time this has ever happened. But we've never had a virus before.
Yeah.
And so people are very cautious about going out, going to their insurance broker's office to sign the contract. We had one that took 30 days.
Mm.
And we finally got it, and we closed it. But it did take a while because they were hem-hawing about leaving the house.
That's understandable,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, people are scared, and I don't blame them.
What do you think is going to be, because people are looking at this, and I'm sure they're saying, wow, this sounds really, really great. What does the future look like as far as life settlements? Do you see any shift, any change, better, worse, the same? How do you
see it? There's going to be a lot more. They say, you know, it's a $1 billion business now. They say it will eventually be a $60 billion business.
Wow. So there's a real bright future in this.
I think it's a very bright future. It's so different than the stock market. It's different than mutual funds. You know, there was a long article this week about all these mutual funds and about the hedge funds, and said all these huge fees they were charging, they're going right down the drain. In other words, people have woke up, they're against all those huge fees, and said those huge fees are on their way out and that they've really messed up.
So really, they're onto the fact that people are looking for a much more straightforward investment. And they've been.
Yeah, those big fees are fixing to go bye-bye. And in other words, always before they could charge these huge, exorbitant fees, people were paying them. But now times are tough, and it's said that the hedge funds, those fees are going down.
Wow.
They're not going to be able to charge those huge fees. And I wonder if they'll be able to keep charging those big fees for people that have $1 million or more dollars. You know, they charge 1.5%, and I don't know if they can do that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with their whole. I think probably the whole way they do business all the way around is probably going to have to change at some point. It sounds like it's starting.
Well, and the mutual fund companies that were buying any policy, it didn't matter. They just buy any and all. They weren't paying attention. That's come back to haunt them because they weren't paying them but 8%. And now then they're going to have to pay less than that because they finally woke up. They bought a lot of policies, and the people weren't that sick.
Mm.
And they're going to live 7 years instead of what they projected. So now they're going to have to, their earnings are going to go down. I was just reading about that this week. And, you know, I'd always wondered how they could buy just every policy that came by. Just if they saw one and they liked it, they'd just buy it.
How can anybody expect to maintain like that if they're not analyzing and kind of weighing the metrics? How do they even?
They were very wealthy. You know, they were spending $135 million, you know, the first of every year. Then they'd put another, you know, $50 million out. Well, now they have now sold their company. And I think that's why it sold, because they said, holy cow, what have we done? You know, these things are not going to mature for several years. And we were just buying indiscriminately.
Yeah.
Indiscriminately.
Realized they had dark times that were fixing to come due.
Yeah. And they thought, oh, well, these will all just, you know, be fine. But you've got to have that income coming in. And they didn't have the income coming in to back all this up. Of course, they're very wealthy, and they could sustain it many years. But their bottom line wasn't good. Yeah. You know, their profitability went right down.
They're buying policies with no returns.
With no returns. I kept thinking that was strange.
That is a little strange, especially when we've been talking about life settlements, you know, and how this works for as long as we have, and it's been consistent the whole time. What have you been doing this for 15?
A long, long time, yeah. Well, we've been in business 19 years.
Wow.
But we haven't been doing this that long. We started doing this in about 13, 14.
Hmm. So you've got enough data under your belt right now to know that this works. Are there any areas that maybe are going to like improve or have you pretty much gone through every scenario, seen everything, been there, done that, and you have got this system down to a complete science now? That's what I would imagine.
I don't know if that's true. You're always going to learn something new. There's always going to be something new come along you need to learn. You're never going to learn everything. The person that thinks they have learned everything is sadly wrong.
Yeah, that is.
Because there's something new happens every week in this business. We learn something new all the time. And if you can't learn, you're not going to last long.
That's true. That is very, very true. All right, we'll talk about some of the risks and get into a little bit more about the investment in a few minutes. But for right now, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
We should also mention your website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com, and people can go there, get information, read testimonials, and all kinds of things. Now, before we actually started the show, you said that we were going to have some very interesting trivia today, and you gave me some clues as to what we are talking about. Do you remember what those clues were? Because it was fascinating.
I remember exactly. This person, or a supposed person, let's put it that way, is 80 years old this week. He has long ears, he's gray and white, and he's loved by everybody in America. Who is it?
I'm going to guess the Easter Bunny.
It's Bugs Bunny.
Oh, I'm so
Bugs
close.
Bugs Bunny is 80 years old this week.
Really? Doesn't look a day over 65.
And a Texan is the first one who directed a Bugs Bunny film. Did you know that?
Really? I did not know that, no.
Tex Avery, born right here in Texas, he directed A Wild Hare. It's the first one that he directed was in 1940. Now, they did one movie that looked a little like him in 38. But in 40, he directed that one. That's what got it started. And as you know, he became a hunter, a tormentor, and the first Bugs Bunny did not look as good. They for a while they were old, making his ears longer, making him shorter, making his body different. And several people worked on in different films till they got him what he is today. You know, the long ears, the body that's kind of pear-shaped, and you know, the protruding back end, and that big grin. I love that smart aleck grin on his face.
Oh yeah.
And it took a while to get him just that way. And it said it wasn't one guy that worked on it. It was a whole team of guys that worked on these cartoons that made him what he is. But he is one of the most beloved characters in all of film. And can you imagine that he got an Academy Award for the best cartoon way back then?
Really?
Yes. His first film, the one I'm talking about, 1940, he received an Academy Award for best cartoon shorts.
How cool.
I mean, that's pretty funny. How many rabbits could do that?
Oh, not many. Just one that I can think of.
Now then, and I don't remember this. Do you remember that Bugs Bunny was in the comics on Sunday?
No, I didn't remember that.
Yes, Bugs Bunny was on the Sunday comics, and Chase Craig, who wrote and drew it, he also did the first Bugs Bunny comic book.
Really?
And I did not remember there was a comic book. He was on the Sunday comics. And that was a long time ago.
I remember like the Saturday morning cartoons, like the Looney Tunes and all that, but I didn't realize there was a comic book series as well, or Sunday paper.
Yeah, and of course, Looney Tunes, he was with Looney Tunes most of the deal. And of course, Porky Pig, of course, as you know, was always tracking him and hunting him. Now, the bad news is they say... The liberals now say Porky Pig can no longer have a gun. Can no longer have a gun. It's just an old hunting gun that explodes all the time.
I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, yeah. And when they first started, you know, they were doing little white rabbits and doing all this. And of course, a rabbit at one time introduced himself, and he said, "Jiggers, fellas." And and he was so popular. Did you know that during World War II is what really made him famous?
Really? I didn't know. Why?
Well, in World War II, in 1943, that's when he went to war. And he became a United States Marine. They made him an honorary master sergeant.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And from 43 to 46, he was the official mascot of the Kingman Army Airfield in Kingman, Arizona.
We still talking about Bugs Bunny?
We're talking about Bugs Bunny.
I didn't know any of this.
Yeah, and thousands were trained there. Clark Gable was trained there. Charles Bronson was trained there. He also served as a mascot for the 530 Squadron, the 380th Bombardment Group, Air Force.
Wow.
He was also attached to the Royal Australian Air Force and from 1943 to 45. And Bugs was riding on air torpedoes as a squadron logo for the Marines.
Wow.
Yes, and then he appeared on the nose of some of these other bomb squadrons, and... that's how popular he really was.
You know, I feel like I remember him on the front of some planes. If I really concentrate very hard, I kind of remember that, but I didn't realize it was such a, there was like a whole movement behind it. I thought it was just, you know, okay. It's,
no, that's how popular. He starred in 167 short films.
Good Lord.
167. He was one of the most popular cartoon characters ever made.
Really?
And, of course, you know, Mel Blanc was his voice for many, many years. There's been several after Mel Blanc. Now then, in 1960, the Bugs Bunny Show starred on primetime television.
Mm-hmm.
It ran for 40 years.
Seriously, 40 years?
40 years of Bugs Bunny.
What year did that start?
1960.
Because I remember that. I loved that. I mean, that was part of why you get up on Saturday mornings.
That's exactly right. It ran every Saturday morning for kids. And 40 years. There's nobody been popular enough to run for 40 years. It's the only animated cartoon I know of that's ran that many years.
Wow.
And that's how popular he was and is. You know. Now, you know, nowadays they want all these cartoons that are so crazy, we can't even let kids watch them, you know? I mean, it's so bad you can't let them do it.
That's true.
I mean, you know, oh, my gosh. But, you know, Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies is the two that he appeared on.
Yeah, the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show, I think.
That's right. And there was Bugs Bunny Thanksgiving deals. There was Easter specials, Christmas. And in 1988, and I went to see this and didn't know that it was a cartoon and took a whole bunch of people. And it was Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And that is a cartoon, folks, and I did not know it.
You didn't know it. Surprise.
It was a heck of a surprise. And on that one, you know, he appeared in there with Roger Rabbit, and they had to make his part as big as Roger Rabbit's because of his contract with Disney and Warner Brothers.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't
and
know
Mel
that.
Blanc did this till his death in 1989, and then other people took over the voice. But, you know, I love to hear him, Bugs Bunny. His voice was great. Mel Blanc, you know, he did Daffy, he did Bugs. All the Looney Tune adventures, you know, I thought were just great.
You know, it makes me want to get up on Saturday, because I know we talk about all the fun things to do on Saturday mornings, and, you know, they just don't have, unless it may be on some network I don't know about, but they just don't have the same cartoons on Saturdays that they used to anymore. You know, they're so different.
No, they've got the things that have to, the big guns, they've got, you know, all these characters. But, you know, Bugs Bunny came back in 1991, and that was one of the first Bugs Bunny cartoons since 1964 that they'd released in theaters. And it was his 50th anniversary celebration. So they brought him back. And then again in 1997. But I loved Bugs Bunny. I think it's one of the greatest cartoons of all. I loved his big teeth. I loved him eating the carrots. And I loved what he did down the front every week.
Oh, I know. That was the best, wasn't it?
I mean, and little Elmer Fudd always had his little hat on, his little gun. And, you know, he was gunning for him all the time because that rabbit. And I loved when old Elmer Fudd would talk about it. And he'd say, "You dastardly rabbit, I'm going to get you." but he never could.
Yeah. Seems like in all the cartoons, he would pop out of the ground, eat a carrot, look around, and say, "Look, I must have took a wrong turn at Albuquerque."
That's exactly right. And then he'd say, "That's all, folks." And yeah. I love the way you'd say that.
Oh, wasn't that the best?
It was the best. Times were good. Children were innocent. And the cartoons were innocent. And they're not anymore, I'll tell you. My little four-year-old grandson has been seeing some things he shouldn't on YouTube. And I told him that's just not acceptable.
Oh, Lord knows what he's found.
Oh, yeah, and I said, if you went to school and said that, they will send you home.
Oh, yeah, with a bar of soap.
Oh, yeah, with a bar of soap. I mean, probably wouldn't even let you back in school, you know? And why would they talk like that on a kid's cartoon?
You know, I don't know. Things have changed so much. It's just like, can you even do that? I find myself saying, you can't say that in cartoons, but apparently you can.
Apparently you can get by with it because parents are not watching what their kids are watching, and they don't know until the little kid blurts it out. You know, I mean, it's the wrong time. They say these bad words.
Yeah, usually when company's over.
Yeah, that's usually when it happens. And, oh, my gosh, I don't know what it's going to come to because, you know, we're going to be embarrassed either way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, we are.
You know, Lucas believes that it's all right for people to just run around without any clothes on. And every once in a while, he'll just strip down. And you see him running through there, and you go, "Oh, my gosh, we got to catch him."
How old is he?
4.
Okay. You can still get away with it a little bit at 4. If he was 34,
maybe not. Well, we're trying to explain to him that at four, you know, we don't show our naked self, that we keep our clothes on. You know, and he just grins and laughs, you know, and bothering.
Kind of like I'm doing now, grinning and laughing.
That's it, grinning and laughing and saying, you know, catch me. See if you can catch me. Oh, my gosh.
How funny. Mm. Wow, this is
the innocence of children is something else. But I wouldn't have missed Bugs Bunny for the world. I think it's one of the best cartoons ever. It won every award there is, and of course he went to war in World War II. He was so popular.
You know, I came into the world of Bugs Bunny in the 80s. I did not know that there was so much history behind it. You know, I just I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, he was so popular. And of course, the one out there in Scottsdale and Phoenix, that's where all the training was going on. That's who got to know him first was our soldiers over here. And then, of course, you know, he was on everything. Like you say, their planes or torpedoes. He was the mascot, and they made him a Marine.
Yeah, that's cool.
And there's no other cartoon I know of that was popular enough to become a Marine.
Yeah. And had we actually known how much things would change, we probably wouldn't have taken it so much for granted when it was new. We would have probably had a greater appreciation.
That's exactly right. We would have, because we'd have known what it really meant,
yeah.
You know, that this little rabbit could do all this during the war, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, how many could have done 167 films?
It's amazing. That's a lot.
Yeah. And so many people worked on it. I didn't realize it took that many people every time that they were, you know, fixing to do a cartoon. It took 5 to 6 people working on it all together to bring it to the end.
Yeah. It's a lot of man hours.
It was a lot of man hours. And, you know, from 1938 till now.
Amazing. Amazing how they bring all that together. And cartoons just fascinate me anyway, because especially when, you know, back in the old days when they would all hand draw them, and then it would look exactly the same, but the arm would be a little bit different and the leg would be a little bit different. They would blink. I mean, just the slightest changes, but it has to be exactly the same. It fascinates me how they even do that.
Did you know he appeared in more films than any other cartoon character ever? And he has his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
That's cool.
Is that cool? How many people could be a cartoon character and get their paw print on the Hollywood Walk of Fame? I mean, you know. And, of course, he was the official mascot for Warner Brothers.
Yeah. How cool.
Yeah. And he was on their company logo. So, you know, that he was the most important cartoon character ever come around, because he was on their logo, and there wasn't anybody else ever on that logo that I know of other than Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. You certainly don't see guys like Archie with their star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
No, Archie was too crazy. I mean, Archie and Jughead, I remember them well.
Now we're getting into a whole kind of other territory.
That's right. Archie, Jughead, and Veronica, remember?
Oh, boy. Yes.
Oh, Lord. But I would prefer Bugs Bunny. He's a true life guy. I mean, he's always creating havoc and laughing about it.
Exactly, but it's good havoc. It's not the dangerous, mean kind of havoc.
No, and they said, you know, the only bad thing is years later when these last guys were creating, they made him a little bit mean, seems like, and they because he's always been funny and wisecracking, and just good humored guy. And they said that last one, kind of not as friendly and sweet as he should have been.
That's not cool. That's a bad direction to go in.
So you know it was some new director. It wasn't the old-timey ones that we knew and liked.
Yeah, some young hotshot.
Yeah, and, you know, I was just thinking about his ears. And some of the old ones, you know, the ears were bent forward. But then, you know, they got that body up and they got it straight, and him marching along with those ears sticking up.
Yeah.
And that's the way they left it, you know, after they had worked on it a while. It was, the ears were always up, and he's marching straight, and wisecracking every step of the way.
It's amazing how much actual planning and trial and error went into the development of them, you know?
It is. It's amazing how many times they had to redraw it, because I remember reading about this, how different people thought it should look a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
And its color, and they changed that also. And they said one of his lines was, there were 750 rabbits born today.
Oh, wow.
He threw that in. 750 rabbits were born today.
Wow. How funny. Bugs Bunny, yeah. American icon.
There you go.
This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Do you shop virtually online over there? Because I know you can't really go in places.
No, I have not. I have not figured out how to do that yet.
I don't even know if they do it. I just threw that out there. I shouldn't.
We don't know. I mean, I need to check that out.
I shouldn't be giving you ideas like that.
That's right. Don't give me ideas. I'll be on it.
You will. So let's talk about the risks real quick with a life settlement before we go. Because with any kind of investment, obviously there's risk. We all know what the risks are with Wall Street these days. A lot of people have felt those risks in their pocketbook. So with a life settlement, yes, there are risks, but they're different than Wall Street. They're not the same.
That's exactly right. The risk on this is it can go over. And if you're not prepared for it to go over, don't do it, because it could go over. I mean, it could say 24 months. That thing could be another year or two out. And so you're always going to get your principal. You're always going to get your interest. It may be delayed, and you need to be able to take the risk of a delay. It may come in early, or it may come in on time. But then there's also the risk of it could go over. So that's your biggest risk of all in this investment. It's not of losing your investment. It's of going over. The second risk is it's not liquid when it's invested. Somebody asked me about that this week. A potential new customer, we were talking, and we were going over all the things they needed to know before they invest, and they said, well, now let's see. If I needed some money, could I get it? I said, of course you can't. It's in a policy. They said, well, that's right. I said, but now when the policy matures, you can always take the money out. You can always get your money when it matures. And they realized that, and they said, yes, that's right, we understand. The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. We've never had one in Texas go under. And nationally, there's not been any for years because of the premium income. If a company gets in trouble, somebody will buy it, as I always say, before 5 o'clock. Because the premium income is so valuable. They may not be making money, but if they've got all that premium coming in, anybody would buy it. It doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah.
So that's your three risks that you have to assume.
With risk number two, with it not being liquid, I would imagine it's probably not a big issue with most investors, because you do have to be accredited to do this, right?
Absolutely. We do not take anybody in this investment that is not accredited. I have lots of people ask, and we'll put them in annuity, but in order to be in this, you've got to make $200,000 a year or be worth $1 million without your house.
That includes vacation homes, businesses.
Yes, you can put your business in it as your net worth. You can put your vacation home, lake house, your cattle ranch, your farm, all kinds of things, your 401k, your IRA, your Roth, all that. You can add everything in to make sure you're worth $1 million. Or you can just take your salary if you're making $200,000 at least and use that. You can use either one.
So in about 30 seconds or so, what would you say is the greatest asset, the greatest benefit, the greatest draw to a life settlement investment as opposed to other avenues? What's the best part about it?
The best part is you know how much you're going to make going in. And you know, if it says 24%, you're going to make 24%. Remember, it's not like stocks and bonds. It cannot go down.
So people don't have to worry about
that. You don't have to worry about it. Sit back, relax. If you've got a contract, it's going to pay 1% a month. If it's a 24-month, you're going to get it. You're going to make 24%.
No getting up in the middle of the night,
early,
checking
but,
online.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're always going to get paid. That's what I love about it. It's not going to be like a stock that went down and they say, oh, you can cash out today, but it won't be as much. When you cash out of this, it'll always be the amount we told you.
And that's got to be really, really, really comforting to people, especially in uncertain times like this. So as far as appointments go and things like that, how what's your availability look like in the next week or so?
We're doing it. We're doing Zoom. We did a Zoom meeting. We signed some people up this week that came on over to the office. Claudia got them signed up. I talked to them first. We did a Zoom meeting. Everything is cooking on these new Zoom deals. Everybody should try this. I like it.
It sounds like it's a lot of fun.
It is. I sat here in my office. You can see me. I can see you. I know where you're at and what you're doing.
You kind of sound like Santa Claus.
That's right. We got it covered, okay?
So one last time, Faye, what's your phone number for people to call?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.